Welcome back. It is the Budweiser Sports Forum. The one, the only, the man, the myth, the legend. Finally returning here to the Baltimore Airways. Phil Jackman back on with us. And Phil, you know, generally with the old guys like you, we only call you when somebody dies. So nobody died today. It's just, you know, it's February.
Wait a minute. I just heard the first hour of your show.
I'm dying a little bit here.
I'm impressed. I love that. Dundalk. You didn't play basketball for Dundalk High School.
You know, a listener of mine gave me the Dundalk basketball.
Well, take
t-shirt.
It off. I mean, you didn't play basketball for them.
I support Dundalk basketball. I was a short white Latino.
Why don't you tell us about your wrestling career down there?
Well, that, you know, that
did you ever win a match?
One time against a kid from Patapsco. That was it. But it was like a JV thing. So
JV.
Didn't really count.
And what happened to that kid?
I don't know. Huh. I didn't wrestle to win.
What locker room did he go to after the match?
I don't know. Probably poor guy, you know? I didn't wrestle to win.
Yeah, it's good to be here. To answer your...
Man, you know, Ray, I invite
you. Hang on. If you didn't wrestle to win, why'd you wrestle?
I wrestled to get in shape because I was pudgy.
Okay.
I mean, I did.
That's a good answer.
Get in shape for what?
Just to look better.
Oh, I see. Oh, for the beach.
To live longer.
For the beach. Were you packing steroids in those days?
No, I was not.
Oh, okay.
I wasn't even packing Rolaids. Chiclets is probably all I was packing at that point. And I invite you in and you just abuse me. Look, we've been talking about this topic with Suroff, and you came in here, the microphones are off, and you're rambling on about get over it already. So he doesn't like you. What's the point? You obviously had some battles in your day.
You're
as
not
a
likable kid. May I put that succinctly?
All right.
Look, there's a lot of people, when we worked down the paper together, a lot of people didn't like you.
Imagine that. They still don't. Now that I'm gone, they hate me
so
even more.
What? A lot of people didn't like me all the years I worked in sports writing.
How could they not like you?
I couldn't understand that either. But I mean, you know, me and the Weave did not get along.
Ever? Was there ever a point where you got along?
Yeah, I was the only guy he could hang around with the first couple of years he was here. Because he was brought in to take Hank Bauer's place, and the coaches wouldn't hang around with him. And a lot of players had played for him in the minor leagues and knew his personality. So he had to hang around with me. And then when he got successful, I don't think the guy could ever handle success, really. You never think you change. You think the other guy changed. Well, right. I'm convinced he changed. But, you get over it. He didn't talk to me for 7 years, so what? You know, I don't think I really missed anything in those 7 years. We did not have great philosophical debates or anything like
but
that.
But isn't it nicer just to get along? Like, when you walk
in
a room of people,
it is, but obviously,
even if you don't like somebody, you don't have to even pretend that you like them. Just be convivial. I don't want anything, you know? Just, hey, how you doing? Good to see you? All right. How hard is that?
That's not hard at all.
It's not hard at all. And when you're an adult, like I am right now, you turn the cheek.
Like you are right now.
You take the higher road. You try, at least. That's all. Did you ever have a player that you liked watching play that you were a fan of until you met him? I mean, a lot of that be careful what you wish for and don't get too close. Because, I mean, I know some rock stars that I like their music, and I'm like, you know, I was on the rock and roll beat down at the paper when I first met you, and, you know, you go and you interview him or you meet him, and you're like, what an a-hole. I mean, what
a
jerk.
I dislike anybody who's a moron. But I'll give you an example. Remember Judge Hendrick, an outfielder?
Jog and George, yeah, absolutely, yeah.
Judge wouldn't talk to anybody, and then the only time he did talk, you got the idea that Judge is not the brightest guy in the world, so who really needs to go in and talk to him after? So, you know, you enjoy watching him play, but there are 24 guys in that ball club. There are days that Reggie Jackson was a pain in the neck, so you don't talk to Reggie. I'd rather talk to Sal Bando anyway. And then there were times where Reggie would carry you for a month, with, as he would put it, good quotes. But
he was the straw that stirred the drink.
There's 25 guys on
a baseball team.
And, you know, I think it was Billy Martin that said this. 10 guys are going to like you. 10 guys are going to hate you. He says it's the other 5 guys which dictates whether you have the ball club with you or they're against you. If it's 10 and 15... you're going to get fired sooner or later. He's talking as a manager. Or maybe it was DeRosa who said something to that effect. But 25 guys are never going to like you, so who cares? Just move on.
I try to get along with everybody, Phil, you know?
But some guys...
I even get along with you. All the people that hate you, I love you. Publicly. You know? And I don't even know why. I don't know. You're a curmudgeon.
Well, yes. That was the act that I put on. But, I mean, there are several things that you learned from me, I hope. You probably didn't realize it at the time.
All right, and they are.
And I feel sad that you have turned out to be as morose sometimes and as crude. I heard some of your crudities coming
the
in here.
The difference is that you're conservative and I'm not. That's all.
Oh, yeah, maybe that's it. Yeah, I'm a Republican from Massachusetts. Right. I'm conservative.
Are there any Republicans in Massachusetts?
Six.
Yeah.
They're always governor.
They washed them out in the 50s, didn't they? Right around the Kennedy time?
No, we didn't need them. We didn't need them at all, you know. Just like we really don't need the Republicans now. But, you know, that's another...
Be nice to Bob Ehrlich. He's going to let me play the slots out at the racetrack.
What year is that? In his eighth year?
Yeah, I don't know. Somewhere in there.
Yeah.
We're trying to push that thing through. Phil Jackman, formerly of the Evening Sun here. How do you feel about that, formerly of the Evening Sun? Like, people always ask me, what's Jackman doing now? So just can we?
Well, I don't even type. You know, you miss writing. I mean, you write every day for 40 years. You're going to miss it, but it's amazing.
Why don't you write something? Why don't you write a book or write something that you could put online?
Well, I coach high school, and you know, this may sound funny, but I run chores. Every day, I have more chores.
You're a professional grandfather.
Yeah, that too. But I mean, you know, I don't get up in the morning wondering what I'm going to do, and you know, it's a wide open day. Well, I just went over to the workout club, and for some reason, I'm walking with a fireman pal, and unbeknownst to me, we walked for an hour and 20 minutes. Now, I didn't plan on doing that, you know.
That's why you were late coming to the show.
No, didn't you say 3 o'clock?
No, I didn't say anything. Ray does this.
Ray does this.
You wonder why I'm a curmudgeon.
You have a booker? You have a booker on this show?
You have to. You want to know what I do all day.
When you're looking for a guy to fill up air with you, why don't you call yourself? You know, this going through
an intermediate. I did that for 4 hours yesterday.
Are you this big? Are you this big in this business that you don't have to call people anymore?
I don't know.
You know, I once had somebody.
It's Ray's job to call you. So if I do it, then
it's his job. You're stealing his job.
Right. I try to let everybody have their role around here.
I understand.
You never understood that.
I thought you were.
You wanted to be the writer, the editor, the sports editor. You wanted to be the publisher.
Well, yes.
Well, right.
I thought you were a little embarrassed.
Embarrassed to call you?
No, because of the this is strictly out of the goodness of anybody's heart
that you would come here today.
That they come out here in the middle of the sticks. You've never even given me a hot dog. I remember one time
Ray, bring the gift certificates in. We're sending you to Looney's.
We're sending
you over to Della Rose's.
I know we had a bad pizza in here a couple of years ago.
We did have bad pizza in here.
Yeah, that's about it.
Man, I'm sending your daughter Sheila and her family over to the Looney's up in Bel Air. They still live up there, right?
Yeah, sure.
We are okay. Well, I got a gift certificate for you up in Bel Air for your daughter.
Hey,
I got a gift certificate in White Marsh for you.
I cannot be bought.
For your wife.
I cannot be bought.
Yeah, it's exactly. It's like I'm going to get better radio out of you because I give you a sandwich. I throw some crab Chesapeake down your throat. Phil Jackman here. We're having some fun today. 481-1570. We'll take some phone calls for Phil a little later on. And I got 2 minutes at the top of the hour. I came in today, and I was gone all last week, and, you know, I don't know about you when you're on vacation in your day, and you used to go down to the beach and whatnot, but I don't even know now whether you read the sports page every day or not. I'm not, you know, I don't know what you're into. I know toward the end you were more into Olympic sports and amateur sports and running than you really were into mainstream professional sports, but when I go away, I don't read anything, and I try to catch up, get on the treadmill and catch up when I get back. I didn't know about the Lefty Gizelle thing on Thursday night for him coming back. You sort of... you had the column and all that stuff during all the Lefty Gizelle years. Any comments on Lefty from you? I mean, after 20 years of doing what he did, that his legacy, I guess, is what it is. But now Gary's come in and national championship, final, for all the things that Lefty wanted to do that never got done.
Yeah, I remember myself and another guy used to do a pro and con on various subjects. And, you know, we flipped a coin. So if
you mean you were actually for something?
Yeah, I was for the Army Navy game.
Okay,
and Jim Hawkins was against the Army Navy game. He and it used to run on a Friday, and his con. After one edition, we took it out of the paper. He submitted it to Best Sports Stories of the Year, and it made it. No, but I remember on the Lefty routine, I went down there and I drew a con on that, and. I remember one of the very first games he ever coached down there. The Army came in, you know, with all these guys 5'10" with the jawhead haircuts and all that other business. And after the opening tip, Lefty jumped up, took his coat off, and slammed it to the floor. And the whole place went crazy. What they were used to seeing was the coach before, I forget what the name of that guy was, but sort of a dead guy. He coached it like it was a PE class or something rather.
I want to get, I'll get some more stories from you. It's top of the hour. I got to go take the break here. Phil Jackman in studio. It's 3 o'clock. You're listening to WNST Towson Baltimore. Here's your flag. Sporting News Flash. Is it sad to you as a guy who, and I don't know if I've ever talked to you about this, but as a kid growing up, I'm sure that you idolized sports writers and you probably wanted to be, I wanted to be you. I wanted to be John Stedman. That's all I ever wanted to be when I was a kid in the 70s and early 80s. I got to feel like if you grew up to be a sports writer, probably that's what you wanted to do, right?
No, actually, I wanted to be a sportscaster.
Oh, okay. All right.
What's the difference? You know, you're in the sports business. I knew that going off to college, what I wanted to be, because my older brother was, and blah, blah, blah. I'll tell you, when you're working in the newspapers and you knew and you saw what was going on, there was a certain inevitability about the whole thing. Afternoon papers were folding in every market. Now, I got here in mid-60s, and when I got here, the Morning Sun didn't have a big circulation. This is a strange newspaper town. You know, for a good morning paper, you're supposed to cover about 40% of the metro area in circulation. So if you've got a million, you're supposed to be
selling 400,000.
Yeah, or some or other. But the numbers that stick with me is the News American at one time, and I thought they fudged their figures a little bit, they got around 220, 225. Excuse me. We were 210. And the Morning Sun was only 180, 185.
And this is early 70s, around that time?
Right.
Okay.
Well, the explanation, everybody always has an explanation for everything. A morning paper, about four or five people read it. Evening paper, only one or two. You know, it slaps down on your doorstep at 3, 4 o'clock in the afternoon, and you get around to reading it at 8 o'clock at night. Well, a lot of people who were going to work early, their Morning Sun, they didn't read it until they got home anyway, but they read it at work. You know, if you go into any bathroom in any business, the Morning Sun has been laying there on the floor, and 35 people have been reading it.
And you get it for free, like I do. Yeah. I come in at 1:55, and Haney buys the paper, and I read it for free.
But we held on. The Evening Sun held on, and was such a moneymaker in its heyday. Wednesday and Thursday, you could hardly pick the thing up. It was, you know, the big advertising days and things like that. Well, the powers that be, I guess you'd blame it on the L.A. Times, or maybe even before then, they wanted to go to one paper, and I guess our circulation wasn't tumbling quickly enough. So literally, they went on a campaign to drive it into the ground. Now, as opposed to the same paper, at the end it was, because all we used to do is change the masthead and change a couple of stories. There were only about five or six of us working for the Evening Sun.
Now you're talking much later, after I was gone. I left in 92,
yeah,
and around, there still was two different staffs.
Around that time. No. We lost everybody in 92. The only three guys on the Evening Sun were myself, Bill Tanton, and John Stedman. Everybody else was gone. So we used to pick up from the Morning Sun. You know, we wouldn't even rewrite the first three paragraphs or anything like that. Just go with it and replay it and change the masthead. And if that didn't do it. But in our heyday, and I'm talking about the Evening Sun now, I always thought we were much better. And we got along with people a heck of a lot better than the Morning Sun. The Morning Sun had this, you know, it was an attitude with them. You know, this is what you will do, this is how you should think, and da-da-da-da. And they have arguments with people and things like that, and they never smooth it over, it seems to me. If you don't like the Morning Sun when you're 10 years old, you're not going to like them when you're 70 years old. It just seems to foster itself, or fester, and go on and on like that. But in our heyday, I remember one of the ad campaigns, and you were there at the time that we had, was on the box it said the smart one, which I don't know what we were indicating. But that was, I guess that's aimed at the News American. But I always considered it was aimed at the Morning Sun. Because as I said, in the glory days, or when it was really fun to be down there, we weren't. We weren't in competition with the. We were both both afternoon papers were in competition with the morning paper. It used to be funny. We go into a Colt locker room, myself and Neil Eskridge of the News American, and we used to have a game plan. You know, if you went and talked to a player, say it was Marilyn Olsen or whoever, you know, Roman Gabriel or something rather, there would always be a Morning Sun guy on your arm listening to the same quotes. In other words, what they were sent out there to shoot down any afternoon stories, you know, because they used to blanket the thing with about
that
eight
way they
people.
Beat you on the story.
Yeah, supposedly. So what me and myself and Eskridge used to do
is that where the word beat writer comes from?
No, I don't know.
You say on the beat, you know, like in the newspaper parlance. I guess the idea is to beat the cop, beat everyone else to the story, right? That would be what a beat writer would be.
No, it comes more from news beat. That used to be the word. You're on a news beat.
Beat, right?
You
okay.
know,
right.
In other words, cops are walking the street. You're going to the news places and things like that. But anyway, myself and Eskridge would. I'll say, Neil, I'm going to go over to Marilyn Olson. You go get Roman Gabriel. So, you know, I wouldn't end up writing about Marilyn Olson.
And you're competitors.
But we were baseball writers, too.
Okay.
You know, not really competitors. They're both the same people who read the Evening Sun are going to read the Evening Sun. And the people who read the News American are going to read the News American. And the only thing that changes that is personalities. And for years and years down at the Sun, you almost weren't allowed to have a personality. You know, they didn't like the idea of some guy getting popular, I guess.
I'll jump in on this because I find this to be interesting. As a kid, all I did was grow up wanting to be, you know, Stedman or wanting to be a sports writer, be a columnist. I loved Vince Bagley when I was a kid and that sort of thing. Jack Dawson watching the sports. And Chris Thomas was the young guy when I was a kid. And I went to work at the Sun. The News American was always such a fun place to work because they weren't making any money. They didn't pay me anything. They didn't take anything seriously. And they were so not serious that I was a 15-year-old kid and used to see me in the Capitals press room at 16 covering hockey. And that's when you first noticed me. And you're like, basically, what the hell are they doing? They're sending 16-year-old kids out to cover NHL games.
Well, as opposed to not sending anybody at all.
Well, I thought
it was a move in their in the right direction by them.
Well, I clearly had a passion for doing it, and part of that passion was brought on by the fact that at the News American, it was fun, and they liked having this spunky kid around who knew everything and was a wise ass, and the kid from Dundalk who was 16 and had a kid. They liked all that stuff. Then I got to the Sun, and it was morose. I mean, everything about it for the 6 years I was there was about beating you down, keeping you from being enthusiastic. And I'll never forget when I got to the University of Baltimore in my senior year of college, and I guess I was 21. It was probably about 1989, 1990. I had this wonderful history professor whose last name wasn't Jack Min. It was Jack Lynn. And I taught a class on the history of Baltimore, and he just thought it was the coolest thing in the world that I was a sports writer. And he would, you know, I was his student and I was a kid and I'd been in this for 5 years or whatever, 6 years at the point, since I was 15. And he'd pick up the Evening Sun and he'd see my name and I was one of his students and he just got a charge out of it. And he pulled me aside one day and I took a special interest in history because I thought it was cool, the history of Baltimore. And he said, and he just had a funny way about him. And he was from upstate Pennsylvania, not Erie, but the town of Sharon, Pennsylvania. And he just had a funny accent about him. And he said, oh, it must be the greatest thing in the world to work down at the newspaper. You get to be a free spirit. You get to do your thing. When I think of the sports writers, I think of, you know, H.L. Mencken. And I think of these people that were aristocratic and different and eccentric. And I said, what the hell are you talking about? I said, if you're not Clark Kent, you can't make it on Calvert Street, you know? If you don't wear a tie and wear your hair just so and have the fair-haired boy thing going on, or if you're not African-American, or if you're not a woman, or if you didn't go to Harvard, forget it. You're just not going to get a job at the Baltimore Sun. But he was fascinated by that. And I guess I had my enthusiasm. And everybody listens to my radio show. You know how I am. I'm pretty out there and I say what's on my mind. But that's the way newspaper people were in the 40s, 50s, and 60s. Everybody wanted someone who was a little more eccentric and a little more outrageous because that's what sold newspapers. Am I correct?
Well, half. You're half correct. It wasn't always like that. You're right about, you know, I used to like being... The guys on the city side thought we're, you know, that's why they call it
the toy department.
The toy department and things
sports
like that.
Was the toy
well,
department.
You know, you get on the elevator, get on the calf for a coffee down there, and there'll be two or three guys, and they'll be arguing about placement on the front page. Those guys that wear bow ties and things like that. And you know, one of them might have gone to Harvard for a year and got thrown out or something like that. But they...
Not for a frat party, I assure you that.
They used to act uppity, you know. And at that particular time, you know, we've had three guys from Yale, three guys from Penn, you know, and Hopkins and Doug Brown went to Dartmouth and Columbia and on and on and on and on. And I used to love it when these guys would not outwardly treat us in that manner, because they get slugged, they get flattened if they did. And I always walked around with this and sort of laughed
now,
at
where
the
did
whole,
you go to college?
Providence.
Providence, okay.
I used to sort of laugh at this until, you know, later on I got to know guys that would be in the building when I'm there at midnight and after and things like that. You know, custodian staffs and all that. And they told me, geez, I love you guys in sports because you'll talk to us. You're normal guys. Well, why wouldn't you be a normal guy? Well, he says, those guys in the city side, they never are, you know. And it's not like they're making a lot of money or the big decisions being made and things like that. And I know why there was a certain amount of jealousy on the whole thing. My brother Frank explained it to me one time. He says, a guy has been working on the international desk all day long, and, you know, they're rewriting and they're redoing the paper. All of a sudden, at 5:15, if he's working for the Evening Sun, he comes walking out. This is when we had late editions. He gets on the bus going up Calvert Street. He watches somebody get on with the Evening Sun, throw every section away but sports. And he said it's so self-defeating. So they in a way sort of disliked you for that thing.
I can tell you this. I mean, and this is from, and I used to admire you because you traveled the world and you've been everywhere and gone to Olympics. That's one of the things I love talking to you about, and anybody else who'd ever been anywhere that I hadn't been. Or, and now that I've covered 10 Super Bowls, now that I've covered 10 World Series and 10 All-Star Games and Final Fours and traveled around the world and all that stuff, being in an airport, anywhere I am in this country, you walk into an airport, you'll see a newspaper sitting there. And you'll see the life section, and you'll see the business section, and the comics will be there, and the front page will never be open. The A section is pristine, and the pages are stuck together because they haven't been open yet. But the sports section will be missing.
Right.
And usually
that's
you go into the
travels.
Can, and you sit down on a stall, and you look under stall number 3, and it'll be sitting there.
Right. Either that or it's on the plane with the guy.
It travels with the guy.
And now think. You got your master's degree from Columbia. You go to work for a newspaper, and this is what you have to run into for the rest of your life.
Now, you're a guy that reads the whole newspaper, though. I'm a guy that, honestly, 34 years into this thing, I've read a newspaper, I want to say legitimately every day of my life, except when I've been somewhere like vacation last week where I don't want to read it. But I every day from the time I was 2 or 3 years old, from the time I could read, I learned to read reading a newspaper. And I remember being in kindergarten and reading the sports section. That's how far back, because I learned to read early. I don't think, if I counted percentage-wise, how many times I've opened the A section beyond the front page, percentage-wise, it would be well under 1%. So that would be in a calendar year of 365 days, if I open the A section and read any of the terrorist bombing in Israel, any of that stuff, less than one day every 3 months do I read the A section. And the only time it happens is when there's nothing else to read, when I'm trapped on an airplane and I'm reading the safety instructions on the Boeing 757.
Well,
I'll flip and read the A section.
I'm going to predict something here. The A section takes me the longest, especially the editorials, Thomas Friedman on the op-ed page, and the letters. Metro takes me the second most because I want to know what's going on around here. Business, you just read the headlines and check for the Tribune stock. Sports takes me no more than 10 minutes, and most of that is Agate High Schools. And the feature section.
But 15 years ago, was it different for you when you were a sports
writer? Oh, heck yeah. You absorbed the...
I remember sitting with you at games, and you're famous for this, at the Capitol Center, and you would have the New York Post, New York Daily News, Philadelphia Inquirer, Philadelphia Daily News, if you could find it, the Sun, the Evening Sun, the News... and you would clip sports stories all the time. You were a voracious sports newspaper reader, more so than anybody else that I ever knew. So now that's changed. I see you.
Well,
as a
the
guy
reason for that is if you're in this business, you're supposed to know more than other people. You know, I walk around saying in Baltimore, it changes a little bit. Often we want the readers to know more than we do. You know, it doesn't. What I've always found here in town is if a guy is local, he doesn't have a lot of interests. You know, for years I used to keep tabs on the columnists in town, and they wrote pretty much, I guess, what they thought the people wanted to read. But if you were a columnist, just to write Orioles, Colts,
Terps,
and horse racing for a couple of weeks.
Okay.
No. How many basketball games do you think John Stedman went to?
Maryland games?
Yeah.
Not many.
You're being very kind. Did you ever see him at a hockey game?
No.
But John was very popular around here because he wrote, quote, and this is what John thinks, what people want to read. You know, I once asked John why he only had about six subjects. And he said, well, his mentor, Roger Pippen, once told him, if it's worth writing once, it's worth writing several times. So John used to get on these kicks where, you know, name the stadium after Babe Ruth and the football field after Buddy Young and things like, and he would go on and on and on about it. Now, the comment you made about the woman from New York who came in here from Seattle, you know, you come into a town and if everybody, all they're doing is going to the football game and writing that, you think, well, the sports page should be balanced. Write Olympic sports. Write Title IX. Write this. Write that.
But you got to write Ravens, too. You can't ignore the Ravens here.
Well, there's six. You don't think we have enough Ravens coverage in the newspaper?
I don't think there are enough educated opinions about the Ravens. I think, first off, there aren't enough columnists in the newspaper. They have two columnists, one who doesn't want to work ever, and the other who doesn't know anything about what's going on locally, to me is a problem, especially coming from my youth, where there was Maisel, Goldstein, you, Tanton, Stedman, Bernie Miklas, and any number of other people that the News American had at any different point. Coward was a column. When I got to the Evening Sun in 1986, there were three of you. The News American still had a variety of people doing different columns, as well as Stedman. The Sun still had Maisel, then Litwin, but there were nine columnists. Now there's two. Thank God I got a radio station around here, and nobody'd ever have a point of view.
Well, we're not.
They cut Garceau down to a minute and a half at night now.
Is it that much?
Well, whatever he gets, but he doesn't get any editorial time. The only editorial we have in this city is this radio station.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. That's the only place where people can be heard, and myself, Bob Haney, and the morons in the morning say what's on their mind.
Even back in the days when you're talking about, there weren't many guys with strong opinions. Strong meaning, this is my opinion. In other words, I'm not going to write.
Here's what I thought happened at the game yesterday.
Exactly.
So you think the morning after Colts game in 1978, there probably were at least four columns on a Colts, and I'd have to go back and look, on a Colts-Raider playoff game in 77, I bet there were four columns. I mean, you were probably one of them, but they're probably, in the Morning Sun, probably both guys.
How about a September 28th game against Atlanta?
The Atlanta Falcons, you mean?
Yeah. Do you think anybody ran out there and
I think the morning after the game, there are three columns, one in every paper.
One of the bosses when you were there was Jack Gibbons. Jack says, when are you going to do some Orioles? I said, five guys went to the Orioles. Like, yeah, but they want to know what you think about it. All right.
They do. They do want to know what you think.
All right. Well, I want them to read the other five guys. Why are we sending all these people out there? What is this? When I covered baseball, I was alone. And which is fine with me because I always wanted to write two or three stories. Another guy comes out, there's another story. You know, at one time the Orioles used to be covered by a game story and notes. And now people call up as much Orioles or Ravens as is in the paper. Some nitwit will call up or write a letter saying, you don't cover the team at all. What do they want? Page after page. If you look at the Morning Sun nowadays, I'll bet somebody will call up and say, you do a lousy job on college basketball. You know, each day in that paper they have top 25 women? You got to be kidding
How
me.
How about this? I mean, and we see this every day. And I jumped on this. Let me take a break. I want to take a break, and we'll come back. We'll get into this thing because Phil Jackman's here, and I want to stay right on my breaks. Phil Jackman, formerly the Evening Sun. We're talking newspapers. We're talking sports sections. We're talking love and hope and sex and dreams and politics and anything else that comes into our mind. Back for more. I'm Nasty Nestor Aparicio. This is the Budweiser Sports Forum, and it is a phenomenal Tuesday edition, and we're getting through it. Stay with us.